Hi, it's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm a top-rated life coach, an international best-selling author, and a multi-passionate entrepreneur. I'm on a mission to help you go from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. The experts on this show will help you achieve work-life balance so that you can experience abundance in seven pillars of life: spirituality, health, emotions, romance, mindset, social, and financial life. When you have all seven pillars of life in alignment, you are balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Let's go. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show, where we're taking you from overworked and stressed out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Today, I have a very special guest that I'm so excited for you to meet. Welcome to the show, Eden.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. I know we've been planning this for 6 months and the day is finally here. And I happen to be in Charlotte, North Carolina today for a conference with my health and wellness company. But this is my priority because your message is so in alignment with what the show is about. And I know that we're going to impact so many people so powerfully today. So let me tell my audience a little bit about your amazing background. So Eden Slobin was a high school dropout and she worked in corporate America for 10 years, earning a fraction of what her and her husband do now in the health and wellness industry. She did the laptop lifestyle before everyone else did it, before it was cool. And for the past 7+ years, her and her husband have been mentoring people to earn a lucrative income while working from home. Her husband, Zach, and Eden together have a network marketing organization of over 100,000 people. That is just so impressive. Because she has such stability in her income, her life has now taken on a different direction where she's not as hands-on as she used to be building the network marketing. And now she's focusing on developing her spirituality, creating this beautiful art. And I really think that's the goal of network marketing or any business, is to get it to a point where you can actually walk away and have freedom to do what you want, when you want, where you want, and with who you want. So congratulations on having such freedom and abundance in your lifestyle, Eden.
Thank you so much. And just to clarify, walked away. And, you know, like all businesses require maintenance, leadership, ongoing training, support, coaching, et cetera. And my husband is my partner as well. So he carries some of that weight too. So I just wanted to clarify that, just to not, you know,
yes,
just to manage expectations of how much hard work it absolutely takes, to get the business to a point to be able to focus on it less. And it takes a tremendous amount of work, attention, everything that you can imagine inside of entrepreneurship when it comes to like really hitting the pavement every day, and growing oneself and developing skills, et cetera, not for the faint of heart, and totally possible to achieve inside of the business model. So I just want to kind of give that disclaimer.
Yes, thank you for the disclaimer. And that's exactly why I am in Charlotte, North Carolina, at a training working on my skill set, because I want to go to the next level. So I really appreciate, you know, that you and your husband are still active in the business, but at the same time, you know, you do have more freedom now than when you started it 10 years ago.
Oh, without a doubt. The network marketing income has opened up everything for us, has opened up so many opportunities, the ability to travel, the ability to develop other hobbies and skills, and hire teachers and coaches and really explore the depths of ourselves. And none of that would be possible without the network marketing income. And we are, and I am forever grateful for that.
Amazing. So let me learn a little bit about your story. I know that you're a high school dropout, which is not common. Tell us a little bit about your origin story. How did you become the woman you are today?
Yes, I would be happy to. And again, thank you so much for booking this interview 6 months in advance, being so persistent. I shared with you, I rarely say yes to doing podcasts, and I just love your mission and what you're all about and teaching women how to have great success, how to really chase their dreams, if you will, while also maintaining balance and harmony and healthy relationships and growing their spirituality and so on, not losing sight of those things just to chase the money so that when they get the money, they're completely burnt out and can't even enjoy it. So huge gratitude for you for doing this work. As far as my origin story goes, I grew up in the San Fernando Valley in LA, close to where you live. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a very religious household and just an emotionally challenged household. My mother is the child of Holocaust survivors, and my father's the child of parents who went through the Depression, and their families really, what I've learned later is, they come from generations that didn't necessarily look at or process their emotions. So that got passed down, and my parents are amazing people. I'm super grateful for them. I have a great relationship with them. And at the time of growing up, it was a very challenging emotional environment for a very sensitive young person like myself to be in. And so at a very young age, I started working. I got my first job at like 8, 9, 10 years old. I was hustling, selling things to neighbors, doing whatever I could to make a little extra money, because in my mind, I understood at such a young age that money equaled freedom. Money equaled some degree of independence to be able to say yes to the things I wanted without asking for permission. And those were some of my first impressions that led to having an entrepreneur mindset. And at 15, I got into a fight with my dad, where I had taken the emergency credit card that my mom gave me that really wasn't supposed to be used for any reason. And I took it to the mall. And when the bill came, my dad and I had a blowout fight. And he yelled at me so loudly, and it just has echoed in my mind ever since, even though I have a great relationship with him now. It was something to the effect of, "Eden, never, ever, ever ask me for another penny for as long as you live, ever." And I, in that moment, decided, all right, Dad, I'm never going to. And I went and I got a job, and I was building pizza boxes on the weekends at 15 years old. And all through high school, I went from one restaurant job to the next, and I stacked up my money so that on my 18th birthday, I was resolved in this idea of moving out of my parents' house and getting my own apartment. And at that time, because of the emotional constraints that I was in and the religious constraints in my environment, nothing mattered to me more, not even education at that time, than financial independence to be able to make my own decisions and choices for myself. So that was where my educational path got derailed. My intention was to get my GED and go to college. However, I found my way into a mentorship opportunity inside of the corporate world, managing finances of very wealthy entertainment individuals in LA. And I ended up taking that path. And through one mentorship role after the other, I moved into a very bottom of the barrel, six-figure position, ultimately. And that lifestyle of working in corporate as a dreamer, as somebody at a very young age who always wanted to achieve the most and attract the most and have the biggest experiences and all of the best things, it started to dampen my creativity, and it started to dampen my desire, my ambition, because I had these golden handcuffs, which, you know, in living in LA and making a baseline of, you know, a low $100,000 a year is very, very, it doesn't go very far. It wasn't the best lifestyle, but it was enough to feel comfortable. And it wasn't until I met my husband and we started talking about business, and been a serial entrepreneur since he was 7 years old, that it started to reignite my fire of entrepreneurship. And we spent our first couple of months of relationship just staying up till the wee hours of the morning, planning all these different business ideas and dreaming. And he was the one who actually introduced me to the product line, which we ended up building a large organization with inside of network marketing. And that allowed me to dream again. That allowed me to connect back in with little Eden, who would sit and just daydream about all the possibilities. And most of us, as you know, little boys or little girls or however you identify, we have these, like, what the adults call fantasies, these fantasy lands that we live in, these daydreams that we drop into. And all the adults tell us over time, and the school system tells us to stop thinking about those things, that they're not realistic. Like, just follow this path and you're going to be able to get a secure job and blah, blah, blah. And so I fell for it. And the network marketing business model really allowed me to start dreaming again. And so Zach and I made the decision that if we were going to build inside of network marketing, we were going to run fast and we were going to go straight to the top of the company. We were going to work as hard as it took, have as many meetings as we needed to, make as many phone calls as we needed to, because we wanted to move really fast, because success loves speed, was what I was told. And I believe that to be true. And, you know, when it comes to the topic of burnout, there's this debate that's happening right now where people who maybe even like myself, I'm guilty of this at a point where I had recovered from pretty extreme burnout. And I started to develop this mindset of, oh, it's because I worked so hard. I didn't need to work that hard, yada, yada, yada. Like all the people that are saying, you know, the Hot Mess Express and 5 a.m. Club and hustle and grind culture. And, you know, don't wash your hair for a week because you're doing calls. Like, I felt that there was such a level of toxicity in that, because here, look at what it led me to. But it's not actually true, because what I've learned upon reflection, and now that I'm also at the beginnings of a new venture as an artist, I realize that it really does take a lot of fuel to get the plane off the ground. I think it takes like 70 to 80% of the fuel tank to get a commercial airliner, commercial jet, off the ground and into the air. And the same is true for building any business. So the question then becomes, okay, if I am committing to building a business and I want to do it in a way where I want to run fast, I want to go to the top, I want to make this worth my time, I really have big dreams and I want to achieve this here. Okay, then the question is, what are the practices that I get to do every single day to help and manage my energy? What are the boundaries that I get to have both physically, energetically, and spiritually that will allow me to maintain a level of homeostasis and mindfulness as I set forth in this venture? So when we hear this whole like, oh, you don't have to work that hard, blah, 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 it's not necessarily true. It really requires a lot of hard work and some challenging moments and a lot of sweat and a lot of tears to really make a business of any kind grow. But, you know, to your point in the work that you do, it's how can we do it in a way that allows us to maintain a degree of balance? And that is what I wish. If I could have gone back and done it any differently, what I would have wished is I had the discipline to employ those practices back then. So I would have avoided a lot of pain along the way.
That's actually leading me to a great question. So if you could have talked to Eden 10 years ago, when you started your journey in entrepreneurship, what practices would you have put in place to prevent burnout and also achieve the success that you achieved?
So that's a great question. And this is really what I've been teaching to the people that I've mentored since I've really strung it together. And stringing this together was painful for me because it was not only burnout, it also was illness. I had breast implant illness that I was navigating for several years. It came with a lot of really challenging and tough conversations with my husband, who's also my business partner. And, you know, for those of us who did kind of go first and fall down face first in this arena, it really does help to lean on the experience of those who have had burnout and have found ways and methods to avoid it. So the first thing would be establishing boundaries up front. So becoming clear in all areas of your life of what are your clear yeses and what are your clear no's. So many of us are programmed to just say yes to everything and be the good girl or the good boy or the good guy. Whereas we don't develop the muscle of actually checking in with our body's intelligence and our body's wisdom to know whether we do want to proceed with a yes or we actually feel that it's a no. So taking a moment before you commit to anything, whether it's related to your business, your social life, your relationship, your friendships, your family, whatever it is, even making financial decisions, to just pause for a moment. And if you need to at first, close your eyes and check in with your body and ask the question of, do I get to go to the movies tonight? Do I get to go to this party tonight? Does it support my highest good to go swimming this afternoon? Does it support my highest good to go shopping today?
That is a powerful question. So if you're listening to this and you want a good question to ask your inner self, ask yourself, does it support my highest good to do blank? And I like to say, walk away from the hell maybes. If it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. And it's okay to walk away from the hell maybes. You don't have to justify, defend, or explain your decision to anyone.
Exactly. And I love that you said that, because absolutely, if it's not a clear yes, then it is a clear no. And at first, especially when we're not in the habit of tuning into intuition or trusting what that intuition says, a really simple way to tell whether it's a yes or whether it's a no is, does it feel like it creates an expansion in your body, or does your body feel like it's going to contract? Perfect real life example. Just last week, Zach was invited to a friend's birthday party. He really wanted me to go with him. And at first, my instinct was, no, I don't think I'm going to go to that. And then I started waffling a little bit and he got excited thinking that I was going to be a yes and started to act as though I was coming. And then I just tuned in and my body just contracted. I felt so much resistance to going. And you know what? What I've learned is that when the resistance is there, you don't have to know why it's there. I didn't have to solve the problem of why is this like happening for me? Why is my body so constricted? I just said, babe, I love you. Have a great time tonight. I'm out. I'm not going. It's a no for me. So creating those boundaries and being willing to tell people who maybe are accustomed to you being the yes person in their lives to start shifting to saying no and owning that truth and not being apologetic about it is really powerful, and it is really empowering. And it's also going to help you to manage your energy by not leaking out these yeses when really what your body is saying is, hey, you've just done 10 calls today to build your business. You were on a training. You have something coming up next week. Like you've got meetings tomorrow. Your body gets to rest tonight. You don't have to say yes to that extra thing, nor do you owe anybody any type of reasons, justifications why. No is no, and that's good enough.
I love that because I like to tell my clients, don't justify, defend, or explain yourself. No is a complete sentence, and no is no. Amen. Especially women, we feel like we have to justify everything we do, especially when we're setting a boundary or saying no. And part of women stepping into their power, as we're sharing on Women's Day weekend, is to own their no and not to justify, defend, or explain anything they do.
Amen, sister. Amen. Yeah. So what are some other things that when we're starting a business, a venture of any kind, to establish those boundaries? Well, how about having actual working hours? You can get a lot done in a short period of time when that time is planned out. And that's what I wish somebody would have told me was, Eden, you don't need to be putting in 12 to 14 hours a day. Like work 6 to 8 hours a day, work it intelligently and be disciplined around it. Meaning that outside of my working hours, I'm not responding to messages. People know that they can't reach me outside of my office hours. And then during my office hours, I have designated times that I use to respond to people's messages. And I love this. This is something that Brendon Burchard teaches, which is that if you're constantly responding to people's messages, the moment they reach out to you, those people now own your schedule. They own your time. Whereas you schedule in your time, what are your most important tasks to do? And then you build in 15 minutes to check your text messages, your emails, and your phone calls to then on your time and on your terms, respond to people. Now, inside of the network marketing world, what you'll find for those of you who are building businesses is that when you don't respond immediately, whether it's to prospects, to customers, to team members, they respect your time more because they feel they know that you're busy, but they also will oftentimes go and find their own answers instead of relying on you to do that for them. So it helps people to become more independent from you, which is extremely valuable. So those are a couple of things I wish somebody would have told me early on. And the third thing, and this really helps to also support nervous system management, which can go into overdrive. I mean, how many of you, I know some of you are watching on Instagram, others of you watching on YouTube. So maybe just pop in the chat box. Like, how many of you feel like your body's always in fight or flight? Mm-hmm. That it's always like rushing from one thing to the next, that your body just doesn't feel calm. In fact, even at night when you lay your head down on the pillow, you're almost hearing the dings and the pings from your notifications on your phone in your head, or thinking about all the things that you need to be doing. It's like it never stops. And so a great way to establish a boundary is to turn off all notifications on all of your apps. Turn your ringer off, turn your text message ding off. If you have kids or you have elderly parents or somebody that might need you in case of emergency, you can create a separate list so that those calls come through. But you don't need a ping and a ding every single time somebody likes something that you posted on Instagram. That would make somebody absolutely crazy. So, and whether it doesn't ping or ding, but it just, I'm looking at my phone, look, doing a task for my business, and then something drops down and it distracts me. The brain really can only focus on one thing at a time. This whole idea of multitasking is nonsensical. So how can we be efficient with our time in terms of how we block it out? How can we allow our brains to be efficient by focusing on the task that we're doing, even if that task, even if that activity is meditation, taking a bath, doing our self-care, doing our wind down practices, doing our spiritual practices, but that we're not always being pulled in a million different directions. Like, how can we close more tabs? And one of the ways to do that is by going into your phone under settings, go into every single app that you have and turn off notifications, turn off banners, and turn off sounds. And now you control when you choose to go into Instagram and check your messages. You choose when you go into all of your different apps to see what's going on, that it's not constantly pulling you away from what you're doing. So all of those things I think would have really helped me to prevent burnout and maintain a level of balance and joy with what I was doing. There have been absolutely times in my career that because of how I was operating and how few boundaries I had, I absolutely hated and resented what I was doing. I loved the paycheck. And I loved the impact it was having, but at a personal level and how my nervous system responded to it, I started to hate it.
Wow. Were there times that you thought about quitting being an entrepreneur and going back and getting a job?
Never. Never. Once I tasted entrepreneurship and I got the sense of what freedom felt like by not having to rely on anybody else, having a job is really wonderful for a lot of people. Some people are wired that way, that they want to be employees, they want to get a steady check, they want to have benefits and whatever. For me, like, I'd rather go to the nearest tall building and jump off of it than go and get a job. Like, that's where I'm at after 10 years of independence.
So you don't regret anything about your decision about being an entrepreneur. You just wish you would have had more work-life balance.
Yes, I wish I would have had the tools, but more than having the tools, I wish I would have been disciplined about the tools, because there are certain tools that I picked up along the way that I was taught that I wasn't disciplined about, that I thought like, oh, that wouldn't be me. Or even if I burn out, like, okay, fine, but you know, I'll be rich, so I don't care. You know, it doesn't work like that, because when you're burned out and you get sick, you could have all the money in the world and it's nice and it's wonderful and it's amazing. And honestly, like, my network marketing income completely saved my life when I did get really sick and I needed to cover bills and all of my natural health practitioners for 3 years solid. Like, it literally actually saved my life. But as far as the enjoyment of enjoying your money, like, I really hope that all of you listening can, you know, take a page out of my book and see that that level of suffering is not worth any amount of income that you're generating, and that the income can be generated without the suffering when we're willing to lean into some of those boundaries that I just shared, some of those practices, and also developing a spiritual practice and a creative practice. And we can talk about that more if you want, or we can just leave that there. But that is what helps to create the balance, because this left brain activity of building our business and being linear and looking at the money and the dollars and the math and the strategy and, you know, all of that stuff is wonderful, but it is only working one part of our brain. And what happens when we only work the left part of our brain is the right part of our brain can start to atrophy, and that imbalance completely imbalances our entire body. So our physical body will revolt if we're not also creating that balance by exercising the right part of our brain with our spiritual practices in some sort of creative outlet.
I totally agree. So I was telling you a little bit about my seven pillars of abundance. They're actually in order of importance. The first one is spirituality. The second one is health and fitness. Third, emotions. Fourth, romance. Fifth, mindset. Sixth, social. Seventh, financial. So spirituality is the most important thing to align. And I know that we were mentioning that you've just had a lot of growth in your spiritual path lately, which has led to art and just so much peace and joy and expansion. So do you want to explain a little bit about your spiritual evolution and
sure,
the way that you are now and some of the practices that have gotten you there?
Yeah, I absolutely can. I think that's a great question, and thank you for asking that.
Sure.
My spiritual path, I mentioned that I grew up in this very dogmatic, religious, old world kind of community and schooling. So I wrote off the idea of God at a young age. I just didn't believe in it. There was nothing that ever got communicated to me inside of my upbringing that God equaled love, or religion is teaching principles around love. Like, that message got missed. So it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I was introduced to spirituality apart from religion. And it piqued my interest enough to just continue taking small steps and not even realizing the breadcrumb trails I was following, like even getting into yoga classes and, you know, finding my way into like a kirtan practice and being around people that were devoted to spiritual practices, even though I wasn't myself. And it took me quite a few years to find my way to people who could assist with this. Like, it started with working with energy healers and then finding my way to crystals, which, you know, I always have right around me or in my hand, and finding different spiritual tools just to expose myself to this idea of connecting with the divine, connecting with what is greater than me, connecting with my own intuition, my own inner wisdom. It took very many years of just these gradual baby steps and exposures that ended up connecting me with a handful of the right coaches that were very spiritual in nature, that would expose me to certain spiritual practices and mantras, and helped me to reframe my relationship with meditation and so on. And all of that cumulatively led me to, when I got sick, I had a solid foundation. And of course, all of the personal development that I had done through the years, but I had a solid foundation of knowing that even though I was probably like very close to dying, I felt intuitively and I affirmed that all of this is happening for my highest good. I don't know why this is happening, but I'm going to be healthier than I was before. When people would ask how I'm feeling, I'd say, I'm healing.
That's great.
I never affirmed the sentence, I am sick. I always said, I am healing.
I got to interrupt and tell my listeners, if you are going through any kind of a sickness or disease or unwellness, That is a great affirmation. When people say, how are you feeling? Instead of describing your sickness or your unwellness in detail and tell them every little symptom, just say exactly what Eden just gave you is I'm healing. And that is just that advice might be the reason you're listening to this podcast right now.
Thank you for that. And to add one thing to that, also, I intuitively knew not to identify with whatever the illness was.
Good.
And so for those of you listening who are struggling in that way, to really not identify with it, it's not who you are. It's not your identity. It's a season that you're in. It's the challenge that you have in order to work through, in order to become stronger, to heal, to face certain aspects of your shadows and emotional history that maybe have been, you know, swept under the rug, et cetera. So not identifying with that. So all of these spiritual tools helped me so that when I arrived at illness, I instinctively had this so woven into me, was able to lean into some of these spiritual tools. But being sick, at first I was drawn to, like, what I observed the pattern was that I wanted people outside of me to tell me I was going to be okay. I wanted to see the energy healer so they could do the work on me. I wanted to see the medical medium so that they could tell me what was going on and what I needed to change. And I had this knowing, I had this realization one night where it's like, oh no, this is actually what I'm being called to now, is to find my own tools to tap into my own inner wisdom, that I have all of this inside of me, and that the season of asking others to tell me what's going on, that season is over. And that's part of my healing here, is the self-healing, is the tapping into this own inner shaman that we have inside of all of us. And so I found my way to a teacher who studied for many years under a very ancient Indian lineage, and works with Sanskrit scriptures and such, very, very divine, very divine man, and a wonderful, wonderful teacher. So I've been sitting with him for 3 hours a week for the last 3+ years, doing deep emotional work, doing deep spiritual work, him teaching me practices, and again, having to reframe my connection to meditation because, you know, and maybe for those of you listening, you can relate to this. I was told for so many years by practitioners, you have to meditate, you have to meditate, you have to meditate. And every time I looked into meditation, it was all about, like, making the thoughts stop and sitting in this pose and, you know, quieting the mind and being still and listening to whatever this guided meditation is. And I just always felt like I was doing it wrong. My thoughts wouldn't stop. And I felt like I wasn't making progress. And I heard people, expert level meditators, say, like, oh yeah, it took me 20 years to be able to get my thoughts to stop. And I was like, I don't want to do this and fail at it, feel like I'm failing at it for 20 years. And so my teacher, Mitch, helped me to reframe that and understand from a different perspective that meditation can be done in a variety of different ways. It's not just listening to some, you know, guided audio in lotus position with your eyes closed. Like, it can be done with a variety of different practices while we're awake, catching our thoughts, being more mindful, sending loving blessings to people with our minds. Like, you know, doing some of this energetic healing work qualifies as meditation. Chanting Sanskrit mantras qualifies as meditation. So anything that allows us to slow down enough so that we can be able to observe the thoughts, it's not about getting the thoughts to stop, but so that we can observe the thoughts enough so that when life throws curveballs at us, we're able to observe what's happening and slow down so that we can respond, as opposed to constantly being so impulsive and reactive and our systems getting, you know, going haywire, because we're not able to, like, slow down and take this different, more mindful perspective. And so that reframe was really helpful, like being freed of what felt like the shackles of this, you know, westernized meditation practice, which is wonderful for the people for whom it works. And for me, it just wasn't the right fit. So that really helped me to focus more on my healing. That was where I took control of my own healing, was inside of these practices and visualizing myself being well and being willing to ask the angels, ask whomever it is that you connect with spiritually, for this type of specific healing that we want. We sometimes get so swept up in this idea of individuality and just this worldliness that we exist in inside of this earth realm that we're in, that we forget that we have this whole spiritual team of helpers. And yes, all they need is, yeah, we get to ask for what we want. And so that really laid a very solid foundation to where I was devout and still am inside of those spiritual practices for years. And then found my way to plant medicine, psychedelics, which at first I had a lot of resistance around. My husband was really interested in getting involved based on everything he had read with the research and the goals that he had. And for me, I was very resistant for a long time. But once I got to a yes, it really helped me on so many levels to unwind my nervous system, help to literally unwind and unbind not just years of my own emotional wounds and energetic imprints, but also that of my ancestors. Like, it's been powerful healing sitting with psilocybin, with ayahuasca, with a couple of different plant medicines as well. And what that all ultimately, that whole kind of chain that I followed, the breadcrumbs that I followed led me to was when I did say yes to ayahuasca, literally within a week, I started to produce art that was so deeply moving to me. First of all, let me say that I've loved art my whole life. I stopped doing it at 15. I picked it back up briefly when I was sick, put it back down. And it wasn't until saying yes to ayahuasca that I started making art that looked like an artist made it. And that the practice and the approach of creating art is weaving in these meditative spiritual practices, is weaving in chanting, is weaving in the energetic hygiene and burning copal and, having om in the background and all of these things that help to bring in a certain type of energy so that my intuition can guide me towards this creating of expression that not just wants to come through, but that I'm so deeply honored is choosing to come through me. And it's a combination. It's a combination of me showing up for the practices, of course, but the energy of the practices themselves now using me as a vehicle to be expressed. It's very, very cool and new and exciting and wildly surprising, Rebecca, wildly surprising.
So cool, because now you've cleared so many of the cobwebs of old thought patterns and belief systems that now you can actually be a channel for the divine, because there's nothing blocking you. All that old stuff has been cleaned and cleared. And I love that. So let's talk about your morning practice. I'm a huge teacher of morning practice. I'm not in the 5 a.m. club. That's like way too early. That's when I'm having my best dreams at 5 a.m. Yes. I don't believe in having a torturous morning practice. I think it should be a beautiful way to start your day. So what does your morning practice look like, Eden?
I love that you're not part of the 5 a.m. club, because I sleep till my body's ready to get up, and it's never once been at 5 a.m. Yes. So when I get up, I start with an invocation for the day. And there's a couple of them that I've used through the years that I can share. And invocation means, so it's the act of invoking something or someone for assistance or as an authority. So it's calling on these divine helpers or whatever religion you participate in, or, whatever you believe in, it's asking for help, for guidance, for support. So there's one by Master Choa Kuk Sui that says, and it's really simple, and I have it printed out on my fridge. I humbly invoke for the blessings of the Supreme God, all of the holy gurus, holy masters, spiritual teachers, saints, archangels, holy angels, and spiritual helpers for divine light, divine love, divine help, and divine protection. With deep gratitude and respect and love, thank you, in full faith, so be it. Mm-hmm. So I love that invocation. So I'm starting my day saying, like, all right, guys, come on, help me out. Help me out today. Be present with me. I'm asking for your guidance, for your support, for your protection. And for those of you who maybe that feels like super, like way too woo-woo and off the rails for you. Like maybe I would have thought that it was a few years ago. There's another one that a former coach of mine, Matthew Ferry, taught. And this is a great one to start the day with, but also to do like anytime you feel like your energy has gotten hijacked by somebody, you're in some sort of like an energetically unsafe kind of a space. It's please set the intention for enlightened consciousness to flow through, to experience purity of my own consciousness and cast out any expression of consciousness not purely my own. So it's basically saying like, please allow me to experience myself fully and cast out anything that's not mine. Anything that doesn't vibrate at 100% unconditional love does not get to be experienced by me. So I love to start my day with some sort of an invocation, such as one of those or whatever works best for you. And then I go and I journal, read for a bit. And I start my Sanskrit chanting. That's a huge part of my day. What I'm getting more disciplined about as well is getting outside and getting that morning sun in my eyes for at least 20 minutes for all the ways in which it regulates our bodies. It's so important. So that's part of my morning too.
Beautiful. And do you drink caffeine in the morning? Do you drink any hot beverages, tea, coffee, anything like that?
I don't. I haven't had caffeine in 4 years, 5 years now. Dang. I don't drink any caffeine. I don't drink any, I haven't had alcohol in years and years. It just doesn't agree with my body. So I keep it clean. I keep it clean. I have a shake in the morning.
Yeah. So tell us what's in your shake.
It depends. I usually will add a little bit of fruit and I'll sometimes do a plant-based shake is generally where I'm at. So plant-based shake with a little bit of fruit.
What kind of milk do you like?
You know, I make my own milk. I make my own nut milk. So I soak, my favorite lately is I'll soak half of raw hazelnuts and raw macadamia nuts in water overnight. And then I'll blend it up. I'll rinse it in the morning, blend it up with fresh water, strain it in a nut milk bag. And I use that milk and I love it. In fact, I'll tell you my favorite healthy recipe is we call it fruit cereal. It's actually our chef friend, Ashley Sarna, introduced us to it. So you chop up a bunch of fresh fruit with that homemade nut milk. And maybe you could throw on like some mulberries or goji berries or some dates on top if you want to drizzle a little bit of honey and just eat it like cereal. But it's just fresh cut fruit with epic nut milk.
I love it. I love fruit so much. It's like God's candy and people want like all these sweets. Fruit is so tasty. Like I absolutely love it.
Fruit has gotten a bad rap in some circles. And I think very unfairly, fruit is wildly healing. In fact, my doctor, who is a natural doctor and has, you know, a ton of credentials, which we don't have to get into, but she has seen through all of her caseloads through the years that fruit has been much more healing for her clients than even vegetables, and that vegetables sometimes can create a big tax on the digestive system, and fruit is like true medicine.
I love that because everybody is so into the keto trend, which is great for some people, but not for everyone. And I've shared in this podcast, I did the high fat, low carb diet and actually blew up my gallbladder.
Ooh,
because it kind of processed all the fat. So not everybody is made for the keto diet and it's not a lifetime lifestyle. It could be just to get to a certain, you know, health goal.
Yeah. You know, it's a good point. And what I've noticed, so my doctor, she uses muscle testing, which is really using the body's intelligence and communication to be able to identify like, all right, exactly what is priority that the body needs to handle right now. And this is great for people who have had, you know, all kinds of unresolved, no doctor's been able to heal you kind of thing. And her name is Brandy Augustine. She's in San Diego for anyone who wants to look her up. I work with her virtually now, but she's able to identify like, all right, exactly what's going on in the body. And then specifically, what are the supplements that are needed? And then the exact dose of what is needed. And so she also has muscle tested me throughout my healing journey for what are the foods that are going to be most supportive to me right now. And it's always something different. I've tested, my body has wanted carnivore diet for some seasons, vegan diet for some seasons, like egg and fruit mostly for some seasons. So our bodies go through different needs when it comes to food. So I think that it can be a little bit of a misguidance when people feel as though this is the way I need to eat forever, instead of like tuning into, okay, maybe my body needs something a little bit different in this season to support what's going on right now.
Absolutely. Well, I just have loved this conversation. You are such an example of someone who has literally lived out the mission of the show. You went from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. So you are a great inspiration to me and all of our listeners. Mm-hmm. How can we stay in touch with you?
I'm on Instagram, although I really don't ever post right now, and it's for the season. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. I have an interesting relationship to social media that I'm looking to recontextualize. But yes, at Eden Slobin, if you want to send me a message, I will absolutely see it and respond to you. And Rebecca, thank you so much for being persistent about getting this call scheduled, for having this platform for people to learn from, and for your time and love and energy. I really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun for me.
Amazing. I have loved every second of this conversation, and I look forward to staying in touch with you. You have been listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. If you're watching on social media, take a screenshot, tag me, or share it with a friend. I'm sure we know someone who is dealing with burnout or wanting to evolve along their spiritual journey, or even looking for a new morning practice. And it would be so loving and helpful if you could share this episode with somebody that you really care about. And if you could leave a 5-star review, I would so appreciate it. My name is Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We're taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Stay tuned next week for an amazing episode. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and your hands clean. Bye, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. If you are looking to recalibrate these 7 pillars of abundance in your life, I encourage you to go to my link tree in the show notes and sign up for the 777 challenge. It's 7 pillars of abundance in 7 days for $7. You are worth $7, aren't you? It's a great way to learn about these pillars and see how we can get you back in alignment. I also want you to consider this amazing liquid collagen. I have been drinking it now for 2.5 years. It has changed everything. My hair, my skin, my nails. People say I'm glowing, I'm getting rid of the fine lines, my muscles are getting stronger, my body's getting leaner. Make sure you go to the link tree and check out this amazing liquid collagen. We have 2 formulas that we recommend. One is for anti-aging, one is for fat loss, and there's a $10 off promo code for you in my link tree. And finally, if you want to up-level your finances this year, then you will not want to miss my Manifest Money March free Zoom class. It's on March 26th at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. It is going to rock your world. We're going to show you 5 things that you can do to start making a 6-figure side hustle. Let's do this. Go to the link in my bio, get in on all this good stuff. If you have any questions about any of this, the best way to reach me is through sending me a DM on Instagram, and make sure you're following me there. And until we meet again, my friends, I will see you on another episode of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. And we're taking you from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Thank you for your support, and we'll see you soon.